This is Father's Day, and I did not get breakfast in bed. But my wife said last evening as we were traveling that it was such a hard week and time that she will give me breakfast tomorrow in bed. So it will be something that will be useful tomorrow, not just something that is demanded on a certain day. No, that's not true. The greatest Father's Day that I have had was driving with my son this past week, and we were in the car, and he looked at me, he said, "Daddy, you are funny." That was a great gift. I didn't want to be known as a stiff neck or something like that. He said, "You are funny," and we had fun doing that. What a great privilege. I am moved again and again as I play with my son on the floor, as we roll over, and I don't do that in a tie. Someone saw me at the door one day without a tie, and she looked very stunned and said, "You're not wearing a tie." And because, dear friends, this morning I don't want to talk about what I didn't get from my father. That would be useless. He's dead. What I want to talk about is what I want to give as a father. What I want to do this morning is for us to turn to the scriptures and to see what God has to say about being a father. And see if God, by His Spirit, will speak to our hearts this morning as men and fathers to strengthen that which He has given to us in being called dad. Turn in your Bibles, please, to Proverbs chapter 1. Proverbs chapter 1. The Father God honors. I'm aware of the fact that there are three kinds of people in here this morning. There are those who have had unpleasant memories about fathers. And I could be placed among some of those. There are those who have wonderful memories of their dads. Then there are those who have been healed mentally, emotionally, from what they have been through with their dads. And perhaps I can add a fourth category. I realize that there are those to whom God has not given the privilege to be fathers, and so I want to be conscious of the fact of that. However, because we're alive, we had a father. So we are included, everyone, in this message this morning. The book of Proverbs was written by a father to a son. And the concern for this father was that his son might learn some of the great precepts and principles needed to live in a world that was contrary to everything that God wanted for the family. Next Sunday night, the theme of the evening will be why we need to pray for our nation. Why we need to pray for our nation. And one of the reasons is because at the very heart of the attack on every and all the foundations, if you please, of the present times is that of the family. Under attack. That is not my concern this morning as such, but dealing with fathers. What does God honor in a father? What does He look for? What is most important to God as we think of us as men, as husbands, as fathers? What do we want to be? What do we have in mind? What is expected of us? And that also is changing. Men do not know how to relate, as it were, to women anymore, to their children, to their daughters especially. Very few to their sons. What is expected of us in the scriptures? I want to look at a couple of things this morning from Proverbs chapter 1. The context is chapter 1, verses 1 to 8. And perhaps the text is verse 7 of this text. What God honors in a father, firstly. What is God looking for? May I sum it up, my friends, in one word? God looks for character in a father. Character, not possessions, not even a sense of humor, which is very important to a father's experience with his children in his home. But God looks for character. Because what we will give to our children will not be what they can hold with their hands, it will be what they have shaped in their minds, what they have put into the computer. And later on, those things will become the means by which they express themselves to the society in which they live and to the family they build. What does God honor in a father? God honors a father who has a purpose in life. God honors a father who has a purpose in life. Without a purpose, my friends, again, one of my teachers used to say in college, students, if you aim at nothing, you'll hit it with accuracy. As a father, what is your goal for your life? What is your goal for your home? What is your goal for your wife? What is your goal for your children? God honors a father who has a sense of purpose in life. And what was the purpose of Solomon? The purpose of Solomon was this: the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, but fools despise knowledge and understanding. His purpose in life was to fear God. Now, when I say fear, dear friends, I do not mean a kind of overt kind of intimidation by a presence that is greater than us. No. By fear, I mean having a sense of reverence for the Creator that has actually shaped our attitude, that has actually provided for us a foundation for living, out of which comes all the means by which we relate to our children, we relate to our family, we relate to our society. Let me suggest to you what one says of fear. Fear is that reverence for God gained through the knowledge of God. Listen to what the text says, the fear of the Lord. Was it Theodore Roosevelt during the Great Depression said this? When America was going through its very difficult time economically, he proclaimed those words that are still used by some: we have nothing to fear but fear itself. To some extent that might be true. But my friends, there is a higher cause for fear in your existence than and mine, and that is to know the fear of the Lord. Why do we need to fear the Lord? We need to fear the Lord because, first of all, this word Lord is the word from which we get our word Jehovah, from which we get the transliteration of the Greek Hebrew word Yahweh, from which we get that little, those two little words in Exodus chapter 3, I am. And I am means this: I am the source of being. I am the source of existence. To speak of God as the Lord, capital letters, is to speak of Him in His essence. Not what He does, but who He is. Who He is in Himself. And the writer to Proverbs understood something of the magnitude and the greatness of God. He had come into, if you please, a face-to-face confrontation with the sovereignty, the supremacy, and my friends, the very being of God, if you please. And he soon understood that he was able to breathe. He had life because God had given him life. He had come to understand that life did not depend upon something that happened in the distant past, a bang that brought things into existence that actually eventuated in people. In him we live and move and have our being. So if God has my breath in his possession, if God has my being in his possession, if I get existence because God exists, then, my friends, he is a God to be feared. He's a God to whom I want to show reverence because he can snap my life out of existence anytime he pleases. And thanks be to God, he's a God of grace. He doesn't do that with us, even though we feel sometimes that we may deserve it. Joseph Parker, a preacher from another age, says this of the fear of God: the fear of God is that whole religion which is the foundation for the solidity, that is, things coming together, the solidness, the foundation for every moral conviction. The fear of God is the solidity, the foundation for every moral conviction. What we think of God will determine how we treat people. What we think of God will determine how we think of ourselves. What we think of God will determine how we treat our offsprings. So he talks about the fear of God. The object of his fear is not fear itself. The object of his fear is to fear God. That's his purpose in life. To have a sense of divine reverence out of which springs all my actions. Not only the object of his fear we see in our text, but we see the outcome of his fear. The outcome of it. The fear of the Lord is the source of wisdom, of knowledge. As I look through the book of Proverbs, my friends, I find something very, very arresting. It is this, that the fear of the Lord is the means by which we overcome sin in our lives. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. He who fears God turns away from that which is evil. If I reverence God, I will not want to do that which violates the sense of who he is. The fear of the Lord is to turn from evil. So sin is overcome in a father's life. Perversion is corrected in a father's life. Clarity of thinking is true in a father's mind when that father fears God. I find in Proverbs, my friend, another outcome. In Proverbs, we are told in 14:26, the fear of the Lord is a refuge for the saints. The fear of the Lord is a refuge. What is a refuge? A refuge, my friends, is where one goes to find protection, where the enemy cannot get into an individual because he has a refuge, a fort, if you please. And when a person fears God, whenever that person senses that sin is near, whenever selfishness and pride would like to intervene and interferes with the progress and the responsibility of a father, that father runs to God because he does not want to do that which would offend God or to violate the trust that has been given to him by God. The fear of the Lord provides safety for fathers. Then, the fear of the Lord brings satisfaction. Proverbs 23 and 17. Don't envy sinners because of their possessions, but fear the Lord. Listen to that. I can appreciate what others have. I can celebrate what others have. I can look at what others have without becoming envious. How do I do that? The fear of the Lord. Reverence for God will keep me, my friends, from wishing I had what someone else has. Reminds me, I was traveling with a friend some time ago, quite a few years ago, and we passed by a very beautiful, beautiful home on Airport Road coming into Toronto. And I was driving this friend to the airport, and he said, "What a beautiful home. I wish I had that and the owner had a better one." Oh, friends, the fear of the Lord, it isn't something that keeps me from aspiring to heights beyond myself. You see, the fear of the Lord puts me in competition with no one else. The fear of the Lord puts me in competition with my own self. And I want to reach as high as I can, as God gives me the ability to do, without violating my conscience, my morals, my ethics, or other people. The outcome of fear, it overcomes sin. It assures, my friends, victory over that which undermines the family life. It brings safety, a refuge for those who know it. And it is the means by which one can anticipate what I call a satisfied life. So we have in this first part of our text, the Father's purpose. His purpose, my friends, is to fear God and to have a sense of direction through the fear of God. Secondly, God blesses, my friends, and God honors the plans of a father. The plans of a father. Not only his purpose. It is one thing to have a purpose, but, my friends, to work out that purpose. And what is the purpose of the writer of the Proverbs? He gives us it in verses 3 and 4 of Proverbs 1. The purpose of a father is to fear God. Therefore, he plans to gain insight for living. His plan is to gain insight for living. We are living, my friends, in complex days. Questions are being asked of fathers by children, I can tell you, because my own son this past week is, I think it was this past week, you see, we were driving or something. He said, it was last Sunday, I think, "Daddy, why did God give us a thumb?" My word. Why did God give us a thumb? I could almost make a sermon out of that, you know. I can say, "Fathers, if you want to know my answer, come to the evening service." I said, "Christopher, God gave us thumbs so we could grip things. You see, without a thumb, you can't grip. You ask a golfer, if he doesn't have thumbs, he can't play golf. I guess there'll be some manufactured way in which they can do that, but you can't grip without your thumbs. And God so constructed us that he gave us thumbs in order that we might be able to enjoy life by gripping things we need to grip. Grip our food, grip our forks. That's why God gave. See, my friends, the psalmist said, I want to gain insight for living so that I can actually know purposes behind things that exist. What did he want? He wanted to gain, to receive instructions. To receive instruction as a father. To receive means, my friends, to take that which is given. Take that which is handed. To reach, to make it your own possession. To receive instructions because of the fear of God. God is going to instruct me in my innermost being when I fear him. To plan on how to be effective as a father. Listen to what Gary Smalley says, without first determining your direction as parents, you will never reach the level of fulfillment you could. It is the biggest problem, that is a lack of planning, the biggest problem with families the world over. Fathers, I ask the question, what plans do you have to develop your own character so that you can feed your children out of that? What plans? See, this father said, I want to plan on how to receive instruction. I want to receive what God gives. What are the means, my friends? The means for receiving instruction from God is, first of all, prayer. Prayer. What time of my life is spent praying for my home? Literally, not asking God for anything else, but asking God to help me to develop that kind of character that will make my wife and will make my children admire who I am. Reading. Fathers, I ask this question. When was the last time you picked up a book to read on the family? I know some of you are reading. I know some of you read the scriptures. I know that. But it's a wonderful, wonderful book out written by Willard Harley Jr. His Need, Her Needs, an excellent book. I recommend it to fathers. And if Marilyn is here, she'll have to buy a half a dozen because I know fathers will go to the library after they look for it. It's a wonderful book, His Need, Her Needs. I recommend it highly. To gain insight for living. That is the plan of a father. And here is how I'm going to work that out. Here are things I want to achieve by a certain time in my life. Here are goals I want to reach within 6 months. Here are goals I want to reach within 3 months. Here are goals I have for my child when the child comes to the age of accountability. When Heather turned 18, there was an election, a local election. And she said, 18, and all I can do is vote. All I can do is vote. Well, it was a kind of a mean thing, wasn't it? To reach that stage and all you can do is vote. No, my friends, from the time she was a little child, her mother and I dedicated her to God. And wherever my daughter goes, no matter where she goes, no matter what she's doing, I want to remind her again and again, remember whose you are. Not a pastor's kid. You are dedicated to God. That's one of my plans, to pray with my child. The last thing we do at 19. She's 19 years old, and the last thing we do before I take her to school every day is that we bow our heads at the door and we pray. That's my plan. The last thing I do with my boy at night, to hug him and pray with him. Just a short little prayer. That's the plan. God blesses the plan of a father. But not only that, it's to give insight. Not only to gain insight, but to give it. To give it. Listen to how he puts it. Hear what I say. To teach. I want to be able to model for my children that which I want to impart to them. In the 18th chapter of the book of Genesis in verse 19, God looked into the heart of Abraham. And he saw Abraham's plans. And he said of Abraham, I know Abraham, my servant, that he will command his children that they might obey the law of God. I know this man. What he has done. Abraham placed himself before God. And out of what God was making him, he was going to direct his household. And Abraham was a rich man, but Abraham never reared his children on what he could give to them. He reared them and what he could become to them. He will command his children. James Dobson tells the story, my friends, you may have heard him saying it, that everything I am today, the convictions that I own today, are convictions that my father shared with me before I knew what those convictions were. So we have the God honors the father's purpose, his life purpose, and he honors the father's plan. Secondly, we go to what God honors through a father. What God honors through a father. First, it is in the father. Now it is through the father. Proverbs 8:1-9. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. What God honors through a father, my friends, is the foundation for his children's morals. God honors the foundation that the father sets for his children's morals. How does he do this? I wanted to see, first of all, my friends, how he does this. There are two prepositions in this first part of this text. My son, your father. He relates to the relationship between a father and a son. And may I say, in our culture, it is a father and his son and his daughter. Or children, as the case may be. The first thing a father does in laying foundation for his children, for the moral and ethical behavior and the wholesome emotional state of his child or children, the first thing he does is to show affection. Now, friends, let me suggest to you, I was brought up in a home where I never knew the hug of a father. But let me tell you, I don't want to spend my time worrying about what I didn't get from my dad. I want to spend my time on what I can give to my children. I want to show affection, to be able, my friends, to put my arms around my children, my daughter and my son, and to relate to them as people. Their emotional health depends upon how I relate to them emotionally. Turn, if you please, to 4:3 of Proverbs. Listen to how he speaks. 4:3. When I was a son to my father, tender and the only son in the sight of my mother. When I was with my father, or when I was to my father a son, my talking about the infancy, Solomon said he was tender. That is relating, my friends, to what he became because of the way his father related to him. The context teaches this, that somehow Solomon felt the tender arms of David, and he became tender. His father taught him how to be a real and complete man by being a tender man. Now, this is important. See, what we're seeing here, he's saying, and the only, what some translations have, the only beloved of my mother. He's saying, between my father and my mother, I felt loved because I was loved. I want to suggest to you, Corrie ten Boom. I found this in one of those books. Listen to what she says. When she was a young child, my security was assured in many ways as a child, says Corrie ten Boom. Every night when I was ready for bed, I could see her. I would go to the door and would say, Papa, I'm ready for bed. And Papa would come, says Corrie ten Boom, and Papa would take me to bed. And he would put the sheets under my shoulders. And then Papa would pray. Every night Papa would do this. And then Papa would take his hand, put it on my cheeks every night and say, Good night, Corrie. I love you. Good night, Corrie. I love you. Friends, let me make a confession to you. I struggled with that when my daughter was born, because I never knew how to relate. I never had any model for relating affectionately to others. I struggled. It affected my marriage. At the beginning of my marriage to my wife, she felt sometimes lonely because I didn't know how to reach out and to touch her. I wasn't schooled in it. My father died when he was only 32, going to be 33. And the first time my mother kissed me was when I was going away. She didn't say goodbye. Good riddance. It's just it's the first time it ever happened. I was 24 years old. Never knew a mother's hug or kiss. Did my mother love me? Of course she did. She was the product of another generation. Long before I knew the song, Trust and Obey, that was my mother's motto, Trust and Obey Me. What am I saying, friends? Listen. If we are going to get the benefit of a father-son, father-daughter relationship, we must show affection. They will not obey someone who simply gives them the law. They will obey someone who makes them feel tender and soft and pliable because the father has experienced the same. I say that with a great deal of pain because I know how difficult it is for fathers to respond, to relate to their sons, much more so with their daughters. And in this age in which you and I live, fathers, where we are told not to touch people, especially members of the opposite sex, let me suggest to you that a father whose character is really designed by God, controlled by God, a father who reverences God, a father who fears God, will never abuse his child. Never. And because I love God, and because I fear God, I can embrace my daughter. And if I don't embarrass her, the greatest thrill for me is not only that I embrace my daughter, but that my daughter embraces me. There's also a second part of this, is the exercising of authority. A father sets the foundation not only by showing affection. But my friends, by exercising authority, every book on marriage will tell you that children want to have some sense of authority, giving them guidance in the direction they ought to go, even if they don't feel. Well, I remember when Heather was taking piano lessons. Oh, she loved it. She was the only girl in the whole world that loved piano lessons. No, don't believe that. She hated, especially when she had to go through all the scales. Remember when she was 13? You know, that's the age you begin to stretch your wings. She says, Daddy, can I quit piano when I get 15? No, can I quit piano now that I'm 13? I said, try me when you're 18. And believe me, she kept her word. At 18, she quit. But I'm going to tell you, friends, I am glad that she stood and she responded and she respected. Go to it. If she had given that up, in fact, when we took her to college the other day, as she's looking to her future, when we took her to college, one of the first things the teacher asked, do you know how to play the piano? Children want to have a sense of authority, not simply authoritativeness, someone who comes down upon them, someone who demands of them, but they want to have someone who can be buffers for them, who can tell them, this is the limit, this is the height, this is the depth, you're free within that. You see, the word instruction, in the original language is this, to admonish, to discipline, to correct. That's what the word instruction means. And when a father does not give that to his child or to his children, let me tell you, my friends, he brings shame to his family. That's what the proverb says. A child left to himself. The word left means to send away. A child left to himself. When a father does not show that authority, that child brings shame to the family. That's what the proverb says. That's not in the textbook of the Markham Missionary Church. It's in the Bible. Instructions. Instructions must be given in two ways as fathers. First, instructions must be given after the pattern after which God gives it. In other words, I don't sit and demand of my daughter or of my son or of my home. I do not do unlike God would do it, because I say so. Instruction must be seen as well as heard. It must be seen as well as heard. And I come to the last part of the message. A father who is now setting the foundation for what is the child's future, that father shows affection and that father exercises authority. But there's one more. There's one more. The father who sets the foundation for his children elevates his children, the mother of his children. He elevates the mother of his children. Listen to what the proverb says again. In verse 8, hear my instruction and do not forsake your mother's teaching. Just a couple of thoughts, my friends, from that. A father who elevates his children's mother, first of all, promotes respect for their mother. He promotes respect for her. Listen to what he says. Do not forsake. Don't take lightly what your mother says. Here is a father who is setting the stage for that child to have a wholesome respect for the person who is responsible for bringing him or her into the world. Listen, fathers. Hartley, in his book, says, he calls it the love bank. The love bank. He says, we make a deposit into the love bank every time we correct our children in a way that makes our wives feel secure in our correction. In other words, my friends, I could never say to my child, that is dumb, in the presence of my wife, without my wife feeling insecure when I share with her any concerns I have for something that needs correcting in her life. How I correct my children will give a sense of admiration and respect for the children to the mother, and the mother to the husband, or to the father. It is true, friends. It is a two-edged sword. And let me say this. It might be, fathers, it might be that some of you have said, I've blown it. I have blown it. Listen, dear friends, I said to you this morning that I come from a home, and I don't say this with any kind of, except pain. I come from a home where my memory of my father is being drunk and beating my mother. That's the kind of home I come from. And sociologist says this, that the possibility of one who comes from such a home becoming one like that is very, very high. But for the grace of God. But for the grace of God. Because I could have become like that, friends. I started to a little bit. I started a little bit of drinking myself. But God rescued me at the age of 21. And I'm going to tell you, dear friends, I say it without apologies, and you will excuse me if I sound like I'm boasting. I am not. I'm giving God praise. My wife is the apple of my eyes. And I want my children, and they can tell you, the way they speak to their mother must be approved by me. I don't mean that I said, okay. That's not what I mean. But if I hear them speaking to their mother in any way that dishonors her, it is my responsibility to correct that. It is my responsibility. I must make sure that when I speak to my daughter or my son about their mother, I develop a sense of respect in them for her. So a father sets the foundation by elevating his children's mother. Husbands discipline their children. That's a Freudian slip, wasn't it? Husbands discipline their children. How husbands discipline their children greatly affect the love bank. Because every time I positively discipline my child, it puts a deposit into the love bank from which my wife will draw later on when it is needed. I close with this. Fathers not only promotes the respect for mother, fathers show the partnership in responsibilities with mother. Do not forsake the law of your mother. And this word law is not the Ten Commandments. What this word literally means, it comes from the word from which we get the word Torah, but it's not talking about the Pentateuch. What it is, mothers have been given certain insights by God. Mothers have been given certain senses by God. Mothers have been given certain insights by God, my friends, that are not true in a man. And this father is saying, your mother has experience. Your mother has insights. Your mother has been ordained by God for who you are. Listen to her. Don't take her lightly. Partnership in responsibility. Dad, you gave me life, the family name to hold. You taught me humble pride and purity, fine as gold. Dad, you gave me love. You always held my hand. You gave me trusting faith that in hard times will stand. Dad, you gave me strength. You showed me how to smile. You are a constant friend down through my